Welcome to the Pursuit of Wellbeing podcast. My name's Maria Brosnan. I'm the founder of Pursuit and your host for the show. This podcast is dedicated to providing wellbeing information, inspiration, and support for teachers, leaders, and school staff around the world. My guest today is Sam Moynihan. Sam is a former history teacher and the founder of Student Breakthrough, his coaching program, Leading the Revolution in Student Wellbeing. As an international speaker and coach, his aim is to transform emotional support for young people and create lasting change for future generations. So far, Student Breakthrough has helped over 1,000 students worldwide while supporting many schools and universities. Sam has trained over 30 teachers and educators to deliver his 3B program of Boost, Believe and Breakthrough in order to bring coaching to more students and help more young people. As an experienced speaker, Sam shares his passion for coaching, education and teaching with diverse audiences across the world. Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Maria, thank you for having me. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited for today.
Yeah, me too. It's a pleasure to meet you. So the language you use around student wellbeing is really strong, like leading a revolution. But before we start talking about that, which I'm excited to talk about, I want to know what brought you to teaching.
Yeah, well, I think like most people, I never actually wanted to be a teacher. I know some people grow up and their life ambition is to be teachers. But for me, it wasn't my ambition. You know, I wasn't the most confident student when I was in school. I got picked on a little bit and I was pretty anxious. And what I thought I could gain... what I could do to gain that confidence, overcome anxiety, I'll go and join a really like manly profession, which was the quote manly, the British Army, right? That will give me the confidence that I needed, right? As a man that lacked that. My dad was he fought in the Falklands War in the 1980s, like super tough guy. I wasn't like that. So I thought the army would give me that. And I got accepted into the Royal Anglian Regiment in 2012. Over the moon. Murray, if you would mention a time when you're at your best, that was my time. Yeah. Up to that point. But then unfortunately I got a letter through the post 2 weeks after that event when I was at my peak. And if you imagine a time when you're at your worst, for me, I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease and my whole military career up to that point, which wasn't far, but was taken away from me. And yeah, I was really crushed and really broken in that moment. And I didn't know what else to do. And it caused me many years of stress and anxiety and struggles with my mental health. But I fell into teaching mainly because my mum was a teacher. I loved history and I had nothing else to do. So I thought I'll go and get some skills, do 2 years, bugger off. And do something else. So yeah, it was kind of forced upon me in some ways. Education.
And so what was it like for you then as a teacher, a history teacher?
Yeah, so I still love history. I don't unfortunately get to teach it much anymore, if at all. I got a job in a great state school in Northamptonshire, like outstanding state school. But I liked it to an extent, but I wasn't all in. And I think in education, you have to go all in to get that connection with the kids, to build that trust, to build relatability. And I was sort of, I was sort of sitting on the fence, like dipping my toe in the water a little bit, thinking like, yeah, this is okay. But if someone had knocked on the door from the army, I would have like sprinted out the classroom, see you later, kids, I'm going to live my dream. So it was, the first year was, and the first probably couple of years were really tough because I felt like a victim and I didn't want to be there. I didn't go, if you don't go all in education, the students don't maybe respect you enough. You're not getting the best results. You're not a full team member. And it was only purely because I felt like I wanted to do something else. Mm. And I was felt like miserable that I had to do this to an extent. I had to, right? I didn't have a choice in my eyes. So it was tough the first 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you have a real passion and a drive to do something else and you feel and that's not even possible anymore, how did you overcome that? Or do you feel you have overcome that?
Yeah, so it got really to a bad place. I was I developed like chronic insomnia due to anxiety, really. So basically I wasn't sleeping at all. Like I'd be going into school on like half an hour to an hour sleep. Now in most jobs we couldn't operate on that anyway, but in education, when I was teaching back-to-back classes, as you know, in education, like it's full on. And I was struggling, you know, I didn't want to get out of bed sometimes. I distinctly remember nearly crying in front of my classes and students asking me if I was okay. And I was just so low and so lost, and I was trying to find my feet. I just hadn't dealt with all this pain that I felt a few years earlier. And I did meet someone, and Marie, you've probably met someone who's changed your life. Up to that point, this person really did. My best mate said, look, why don't you talk to someone? Now, for a young man who had the assumption that men are tough and strong and don't show vulnerability, that was a big step. But I was at the bottom of the mountain, right? There's only one way up. Bottom of the mountain, one way up. And 23rd of April, 2015, I spoke to someone for the first time. And lo and behold, this guy was a coach. Now, you probably just noticed that I remember that date, and it's ingrained in my brain, that date. And for the first time, Maria, like, I spoke to someone about how I was feeling. And I sobbed like a baby. Like, I was so emotional. I always say I learned to express and not suppress, which is kind of my tagline now for talking, you know, for getting people expressing themselves. So I learned to express and not suppress how I was feeling. And in doing so, I felt lighter. For the first time, I look back on that failure of getting Crohn's disease as a blessing. And I engaged with my failure differently. I didn't see it as like something that could hold me back. I saw it actually like as part of my journey onto something else.
I just want to pick up something, because when you said failure, that people listening to this won't have been able to pick up, that you did air quotation marks around that. And I think that's a really important point to say, that it seemed like a failure.
It did. Well, like it did. And I put it in quotation marks now, because like I say it in my talks, like, we're all going to fail. You know, spoiler alert, like, it's going to happen. But when I had a very like lovely upbringing, and I didn't really have any like massive failures, school, and obviously you had, you know, a few setbacks there, but to be told you can't complete your dream because of a medical condition, you know, that was like, it felt like I'd let my dad down, I let myself down, let my family down. So now I put it in quotation marks, because like, obviously, Maria, it's an unbelievable blessing, because I'm on the call with you right now talking about education and student breakthrough, and I've helped lots of different children and young people. Mm. And I do think my dad's probably even more proud of me than if I'd, you know, gone into the army and done that. Mm. Failure is just like it's like pulling back a bowstring when you fail. It's, you know, it shoots us into different directions. Like, it can cause us pain pulling that back. But when the arrow gets, you know, when the arrow shoots, it can go into different directions, and, you know, we're always self-correcting. Yeah. And that's one thing I try and instill in young people from a young age, which we don't do a very good job of in education, I don't think.
Yeah. So tell me then, you met your coach and feel like you had a breakthrough, and you feel like you were lighter just as a result of talking. And I can totally see that for young men. You know, we just raise our boys and young men to be strong and tough and manly. So take us back to that. I feel like I interrupted you a little bit. that experience of talking to somebody, and what did you learn from that? What did that do for you?
So yeah, three things were like express, don't suppress. So talk. Yeah. Second thing was failure is a blessing. Later on, I learned that this kind of support, coaching, needs to be in secondary schools. That's really what I learned. After that event, we hung up the phone. And I put my headphones in, put on some of my favorite songs, and walked around the park. And the park was like vibrant. It was bright. It was colorful. It was like taking off the pair of sunglasses that I'd had on for like 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I cried all the way around the park. And I felt amazing though. And I went back to school the next, that was on a Friday. I went back to school on the Monday. And again, it was like, I went all in. I said I was dipping my toe in the water. Like, this time I was like cannonballing in, right? Like, fully jumping in. And it was an amazing experience, because for the first time I'd gone all in, and I was fully invested in history teaching and getting results and working with young people. It was a great time. Like, I felt just happy to be a teacher.
And what happened to your insomnia? It sounded like you were having a really significant change in your life.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was like the spark of that moment was a spark of lots of, you know, personal development and growth, and going to retreats and coaching. And I've been coached ever since, not from different people, but, you know, up to that point now. So that was when I was 23. I'm 30 now. So, like, you know, it's been 7 years of, you know, personal development and seminars and coaching. And I still don't sleep very well. Like, you know, if you've had that experience of sleep, it's hard to get it back. But, like, I sleep better than I ever did. You know, I used to be up, like, marking essays at one or two in the morning all the way through the night. Because in your head, it's like, well, I'm not going to have the energy tomorrow, so I'll do it now. But then what that does is your body's not rested at all. So then you go into school and then you're even more tired, and it's like a vicious cycle. So yeah, that did improve. But it took a lot of work. But then when I went back after this realization, there was, you know, students who were struggling with anxiety. They were struggling with underconfidence, with low motivation, maybe with depression. And with this new awareness, I was like, we're not doing enough. Yeah. We had this like tick box exercise called, academic mentoring, where I would see my form group for 10 minutes each throughout the whole year. Now, obviously we could talk during that time anyway, but this is dedicated time. I was off timetable for a day. They book in appointments and we'd chat, and it was like a bit forced. It wasn't really necessary. Well, it wasn't not necessary, but there wasn't enough of it. And just so many students go beneath the radar who are struggling. And that's where this whole, you can kind of see where the story goes now, that I realized that I could do more than just teach history, and I could have a bigger impact in the world and on the lives of the students I was working with.
Yeah. And so that episode happened for you 2 years into teaching. So you stayed in teaching for another.
Yeah, I did. So? 2 years. I did 5 years total.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was around, then I did like a couple of years of just teaching. I had this brainwave, I say a brainwave, like a spark of inspiration, one night after a large glass of red wine, before my head hit the pillow. What if I could coach students? And that was, I actually did some work with some students on sleep, actually. I've still got it. It was called the Acceptance Academy I made. I had two students who were struggling with their sleep, and I took them through a series of like workshops. And that was really the first step of like, oh, well, I could do something different here. And I really enjoyed those sessions. And I helped them with their sleep. And then that kind of got me into training to be an academic life coach, which is with this great American company. And then just trialing stuff with students at school in my break times and after school. And I look back, my first workshop was in my classroom, had like three kids in there. You know, now I'm running an event tomorrow for like 30 students, and I've done talks for like 200 students. It's funny to look back on those times.
Nice. And so tell us about your 3B program. What's involved in that, and how could teachers or people listening to the podcast, what can they take from that to support their young people and students?
Yeah, so 3Bs was something I made out of my teaching experience, my coaching experience, personal development. It's always kind of changing and adapting whenever I go to new seminars and stuff. It's called Boost, Believe, and Breakthrough. And in Boost, we really, for the first time, I think, if you're a teacher listening to this, in Boost, when I train people in Boost, it's lots of what we call breakthrough listening. And I think in teaching and in life, you know, listening is such an underrated skill. Although most of us just listen to respond or reply, not really to understand what's going on. And in my first few years of teaching, I was expert at this. You know, like I'm going to be honest, I don't really care what the students were saying. In terms of, I've got so many things, I've got to answer this email, I've got to speak to this parent, I've got a plan for the next lesson. And I wish, looking back, especially in those early years, that it's almost like just turning down the noise and just giving that student just 30 seconds of just pure like breakthrough listening, which is like listening to understand with empathy with your heart, you know, being a heart with ears. Because honestly, the first time I worked with students, most of them come away, they're like, you're so great to be listened to in a non-judgmental way. It's really powerful. So that's one tip I'd say for people in the Boost. I think in the belief section, I know in the belief section, do lots of work around like values, their limiting beliefs, confidence, and actually overcoming failure and setbacks. And I think one thing I did towards the end, I actually had this stuck up in my classroom. I had to back myself up to the head teacher about why I had failure as a blessing in my classroom, like written up, right? That's quite, I stuck it up in big letters and came in my room, and he questioned me about it. he said it was fine by the end, but it was really to show that you're going to fail at history at some point. You're going to have a rubbish test result. Like, that's okay. But it's actually how we engage with that is really important. So we have failure as a blessing, and then underneath two questions: what can I learn from this, and how can I use this knowledge?
Yeah.
And actually getting students to engage with that, right, and see it as a positive is so, so cool. Because like the weaker students, you know, they need to be engaged with, well, everyone needs to be engaged with failure, but for the weaker students, it kind of gives them that security blanket that, like, as long as I keep putting in effort, that's great, because I'm going to keep learning and growing. And for the ones that are like, I'm just, you know, perfectionist, which I really despise that word. It's like I think it's like a bit of toxic positivity, because when those students fail, or they don't get full marks, they go into meltdown. Again, it's giving them the skills to realize that, well, actually, that's okay, because it's going to make you better for the next one. So that's something you believe. And then in Breakthrough and throughout the program, but in Breakthrough, really kind of summarize the importance of action taking. And another thing we mentioned in this in Breakthrough is, like, if you want different, you got to think different. You got to speak different. You got to do different stuff. And that's why coaching works for young people, because there's lots of awareness, but we actually ask them, you know, sometimes students in our primary Breakthrough, like, you know, 6-7 years old, what do you want to go away and do this week? And that's powerful, because that's empowering them to go away and make their own decisions, become leaders for their lives. So yeah, I think for me, it's like Breakthrough listening. I think it's failure as a blessing. And lastly, like, action over everything.
I love those. And when you say Breakthrough listening, is that similar to active listening?
Yeah, I just called it Breakthrough because it's student Breakthrough.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can do that. You can do that. Yeah, I love that. So active listening, bouncing back from failure, and I love those questions. What can I learn from this, and how can I use this knowledge? And action taking. So I'm a huge believer in action taking, and I think that's where our well-being really rests, in our small daily actions, especially small choices that we make every day. And because we think that we need to take these huge, big steps and do a 10-day retreat or do something dramatic, but I think small daily actions are powerful things. Looking back to when you were teaching, there were some key areas we talked about before we started the podcast around curriculum, around data and targets. Is there anything you wanted to add about that? What is it about those things that concern you?
I just think there's lots of things that we can improve, and there's some things that we can control, which will make everyone's lives easier. As you know, you do some great work with teachers, Maria. Like, if we put less pressure and stress and anxiety more on teachers, then they're going to perform better for the students. I just think one thing that could be really reduced is like that curriculum bloat that we have. And I call it bloat because it's like tacking little bits on over the years from different governments, and now it's just this huge beast that you can't teach anything effectively, really, in detail. I just think that's something like cutting back that back, like almost like trimming the fat off some of these topics and getting rid of some stuff, would be a nice place to start. And therefore, students will learn different things on a deeper level. There'll be less pressure on teachers, not so much stress to get everything finished, which, trust me, was intense at times, really intense. I just think that we can bring back a love of learning by doing that. Similarly with the data and targets, you know, like, all I end up doing was just bashing random numbers into a spreadsheet, trying to show progress for students. Like, we create data for data's sake, because there's people that need to manage data, even though lots of the data, I think, is ineffective. Now, we still need to use that, right? It's still important, but I just think we could be doing a better job of it. And just, again, what, like, I don't know what purpose that served, me just putting random numbers. And it was random numbers, because I was trying to show progress, like, throughout the whole year. Like, with students, like, you know, it's a tough one. And I know every teacher that I was working with in that school felt the same, well, in my department, felt the same about it. And then, yeah, lastly, I guess the mental health support, like I said, like giving students access to stuff that's positive, action orientated, and helps them move forward, instead of for the students who are really, really struggling, or it's just like counseling, which, you know, not many students, some students don't connect with. They actually just want someone to talk to and then just take action on. Those are things I've changed just in my experience.
Yeah, and they're tough things because they're central, aren't they? You know, and they come from on high. and they come down delivered through many layers to us, in the curriculum and data and targets, etc. And many guests that I've had on this podcast talk about this and talk about, you know, high stakes accountability and those things as huge pressures on teachers and leaders and everybody in school, and leading to the issues that you're talking about, that that everybody in school feeling stressed and having trouble, especially young people, and especially now. What do we actually do? Because, you know, we can talk about it and, you know, there's the classic saying, you know, control the controllables, and those things are far out of our control. What do you have any really practical suggestions about what people can do about it?
No. This year on my vision board, I put like time for revolution, like, because I really wanted to change. You know, it's not just about mental health support. It's really like, for me, it's trying to change education. And I made a, you know, I did a grassroots Facebook group called the Education Revolution. And it's so tough because there's so many people who've got so many great ideas, but it never seems to move forward. And I've seen many different people try. It's, I don't really know, but I know the one thing we can do is keep having these conversations and keep collaborating with people and keep connecting. And the problem is, obviously, the people that make these decisions have never been in the classroom. And it's just years of inefficiency and years of issues and challenges. And I'd like to think, you know, in my lifetime, it will change. Because that's the thing. It's like 200 years old, this education system. You know? It's made for factory workers, like going to a bell and taking orders. And it doesn't, there's no love of learning at all. Right. Apart from like when I was teaching geography, and I'm a history teacher. When I was teaching geography, you had to like get the kids to make like a volcano cake or something. That was a love of learning. But like apart from that, and I took them out to like act out battles. And so what I'm saying here is like, you know, it's just so much focus on data and testing and trying to cram everything in.
And look what happens, you know, people like you leave teaching. The statistics around that are well known, that half of teachers leave teaching within the first 5 years. And that's a crying shame because.
Oh, I wish I didn't. Like my brother left in two. Who was a year one teacher. He was phenomenal, you know, phenomenal. He was under way more pressure than me. Book scrutiny, learning walks, the pressure of an outstanding primary school with like, you know, all the subjects and all the, you know, he was under way more pressure than me. I kind of left to my own devices to an extent compared to him and other schools, but you know, he was great and he loved it. He obviously didn't love the micromanagement pressure, data and all that stuff. You know, like giving four-year-olds phonics tests, them crying going into school because they had a test. Like, what? Who is that serving? That's direct experience.
Yeah, and he left teaching too?
2 years he did, 2 years. Yeah. And he was an outstanding teacher. He was so good.
I agree. It's good to have these conversations and to bring these things to light. It's so challenging, isn't it? Because it's important to talk about it, but really important to talk about being proactive and what we can actually do about it. And you know, I really would advise people to connect with you and to talk to you about the work that you're doing. I will put all of your contact details in the show notes. But before we wrap up, Sam, is there anything else you'd like to say? Any kind of words of wisdom or anything you'd like to leave people? A more hopeful message for people listening to this.
I'll leave my favourite quote, which if you listen to this, you'll probably resonate because if you've met Maria, but it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken adults. So that's the thing that fires me up every single day. If we can give more students the skills, tools, knowledge, beliefs, strength to handle their problems now, then we can have less mental health challenges, a more resilient workforce, and actually people who are just like, you know, living a better life than some adults I know at the moment. So if we can work younger, if we can target people younger with this support, then everyone's winning, I feel.
Yeah, Frederick Douglass. And I think that's what teachers do, and giving them the tools, and with your support, with your fantastic coaching program, giving them the support to support young people in building strong children, not repairing broken adults.
That's it.
Thank you so much for joining us. I've been speaking with Sam Mornay. You can connect with Sam on Facebook and Instagram at Student Breakthrough. His website is studentbreakthrough.com and LinkedIn is Sam Mornay. Sam, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Maria, that was really fun. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. Now check out our website, pursuitwellbeing.com. If you enjoyed the podcast, please hit the subscribe button in your podcast app. And if you feel inspired, please rate and review it and share it with your friends. I love getting your feedback and learning how we can improve our program.